I'm Chris Farrell from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome, everyone. We are live right here on PopX Cast, episode number 30. Man, you are looking fly.
Mm. What do you like those sunglasses?
Do we need roads where we're going?
Dude, I am.
Roads where we're going.
We don't need roads.
Oh man, I freaking love you, dude. Oh my god. So hey guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We like to welcome everyone joining us live here at PopX.live and all the way over at Geeks.live, our home network chat room. So come hang out with us, join the conversation live and right here on PopXcast.com.
Mm-mm. And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian geek at heart. Hey, if you guys missed last week's episode 29, where we were live from Crumbs World Comics in Winter Garden, Florida, for the replay, check out our official website at popxcast.com. Be sure to head over now to Google Play and iTunes as well, and click that subscribe button. Catch up while you're there. Leave us a wonderful and glowing 5-star rating and review. We certainly appreciate that. Joseph Burke, how are you today, sir?
Oh, man, I am so freaking excited. I was putting together this week's notes, and I was so excited. I actually got the notes done like Tuesday of last week. And So I got everything lined up. You guys are in for a treat. This is episode 30. We've reached 30 episodes. This is crazy. Wow. So we've been going strong since January. And we're going to continue to go strong all throughout the rest of the year and the years to come. Mm-hmm. So hang with us. And, we're excited about this week's show. And we're excited about shows. We'll be telling you about some future stuff we got coming up very shortly. But I'm good. I'm great. We got some nerdy stuff to do. We're going to roll the news intro. We'll be right back. Don't go nowhere.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
All right, leading out the top of the news this week, we have the Russo brothers have officially introduced some new characters in Captain America Civil War with Spider-Man and Black Panther, and they will continue that trend in 2018 release of Avengers Infinity War. The Russos have stated that the film will be a climax to the Marvel Cinematic Universe as we now know it, and will be the start of the dawn of a new era, the introduction of all new characters. Wow. What are your thoughts on that, Austin?
That is very interesting, because you know, obviously, that they're introducing the Captain Marvels and the Spider-Mans to be the future of the MCU. Mm-hmm. But if we're changing things up, right, this means that our Iron Mans and our Captain Americas, could they be no more? What's going to happen? I don't know, but it's very interesting that they're saying this far in advance from this movie.
It is really interesting, and when I read that, I had to do a double take. I was like, "Am I reading this right? What's happening to Chris Hemsworth? What's happening to Chris Evans?" And it's just like, what? So you know what though, the Russo's brothers—they've got a pretty good track record. So I think we're good.
Trust them with these Marvel movies. I trust them with my life, Joe. That's how much I trust.
I don't know if
I'd
go that far, but.
Well, maybe that's pushing it, but I'll take comic book characters instead. Yes, moving on here, we have Beetlejuice is currently being developed to hit the Broadway stage in the 2018-2019 season. Beetlejuice on Broadway, Joe. How do you feel about this?
I'm the ghost with the most, babe. I'm the ghost with the most, babe.
I don't know. You've convinced me. Okay.
I don't know. Dude, I don't know. Seriously, I cannot sing worth, I don't know. I sound like a really bad cow in a barn with the metal tin over its mouth. I don't know. It sounds horrible.
I thought it was really good, Joe. I appreciate that.
Oh, stop it. Stop it right now. I smack you. No.
I'll take that.
Oh, touche, baby. Well, I think it's interesting. We'll just have to wait and see what it is. I did see Green Day on Broadway in New York when Green Day launched there.
How was that?
It was mind-changing. It takes place in the early 90s, and I'm not going to get too much into it, but there's been some amazing, epic fails, and then there's been some really awesome
Spider-Man.
So we'll wait and see. I don't know. You know, it could be. Yeah, I don't know. Moving on, Dwayne The Rock Johnson says that Jumanji will not be a reboot, but a continuation of Robin Williams' original. So we get to actually see the continuation of what's going on in the Book of Jumanji and how all the characters and the stories and the animals come to life. Now, and so Rock has been busy. I mean, he's been cast as Black Adam with the DCU. He is also, he's got a lot going on right now.
Yeah. I'm convinced at this point that The Rock is actually cloning himself.
I think there's more than one Rock. Yeah.
Because it seems like every single week he is announced to be in a new movie. I can't understand it, but I love it. I'll take as much Rock as I can possibly get.
He's a freaking monster. And you will take that Rock and you'll love it.
I will take that Rock. I'll take that Rock, son.
Take it.
You know what, Joe? Let's talk about theme parks.
Okay.
How about that?
All right.
With the rebranding of the Tower of Terror at Disney's California Adventure to Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, that is interesting in itself. Fans may be getting a Guardians-themed roller coaster at Disney's Epcot, replacing Ellen's Energy attraction. The current building will be demolished to make room for the new attraction. Ellen's Energy was one of the last original attractions remaining since the park opening in 1982. So how do you feel about Guardians getting us on a roller coaster?
Well, the last time I rode Ellen's Energy Adventure, which was about a year and a half ago, I immediately felt like I was transported to 1994. It was really bad.
So it's time for a revamp.
Yeah, none of the projections are digital. It's all the old lamp projection, and it's just it was really bad. And you know, back when Bill Nye the Science Guy was actually famous on his kids show in the morning on Saturdays, he was part of that too. And I'm like, holy teleportation, galactical, interstellar time traveling device, Batman. This is crazy. Goodbye. Ellen, and welcome, Guardians. That's all I got to say about that. But, moving on from one Marvel thing to another, the end of the road for Hugh Jackman, we believe, has finally come as filming has wrapped for Wolverine 3. And we've stated this before in previous podcasts, we've stated this over and over again. Hugh Jackman has said this will be the last time he puts on the claws as Wolverine. So I don't know what all he's got in store, and we've heard some rumors too, as well as Patrick Stewart will be, this might be his final role as Charles Xavier. There's a lot of, handing off of the batons of the climactic roles here. So I'm really excited.
It's sad because this guy has played this character for almost 20 years now.
Yeah, and if you go back and watch his X-Men 1, and then you see him like in the most recent X-Men. He's so freaking jacked right now. Jackman is jacked.
Hugh Jackman. He is huge. He is a huge jacked man.
I got nothing for that.
Let's go from Wolverine to Ant-Man. Michael Pena will return in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Fans remember the character Lewis for his rambling, long-winded explanations. It's uncertain right now if the van will be returning, but the film is scheduled to hit theaters June 28th, 2018. I'm very excited about this. I really enjoyed Ant-Man, and I think Michael Pena added so much to that movie. It is his breakout role, And I can't wait to see more of his
character. it's really true, because Michael Peña, he was a really significant part of that movie, because his flashback scenes and trying to retell the stories that were just like so dramatically overshot and not it was cool. And I'm glad he's returning, and because that is part of the Ant-Man franchise as we know it on the screen. So
absolutely.
And in more Guardians of the Galaxy news, Guardians of the Galaxy have been officially confirmed for Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is so exciting, Joe.
This is so exciting. I'm done. I'm just going to stop the podcast right there, because we are done. I'm just messing with you. I can't believe it. We finally get the merging of two worlds. And, you know, for a while we've been watching Star-Lord. We know the Guardians Part 1, and we kind of know his backstory. Now we finally get the merging of both worlds of the MCU from the Galactic, and then soon to be in November with Doctor Strange, the metaphysical. Mm-hmm. So we're getting all of that's coming together, and it makes me so freaking happy. Why am I doing this? I don't know. I'm just really happy.
That's reenacting what's happening.
That's
dude.
It right there. It's a blending, if you will.
Mashing.
It's a blending.
Mashing up the lovers.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, too much. But yeah, man. Like, before it was like, okay, the MCU is getting these brand new characters and they're coming into the Avengers movies. Now, since Guardians is so popular, it's like these fan favorites are meshing with these fan favorites. We're getting Doctor Strange, Captain Marvel. Dude, it is what a time to be alive.
Just when
Joe.
You said,
I say this all the time.
Just when
man.
You said that, a little bit of pee came out.
Joe, I have so excited. This entire podcast.
Oh my God.
And
seriously.
You know what?
I have bladder control issues.
We've got even more Marvel news coming up right now.
Okay.
Spider-Man Homecoming has cast Zendaya in the iconic role of Mary Jane Watson. Now, there has been a lot of mixed emotions circulating about this choice, because when she was first cast, she got the name of just Michelle. Now it's come out that she is the iconic Mary Jane. Well, of course, Marvel's going to do that to throw us off, but she's Mary Jane, man. What do you think about this casting?
I think it's great.
I think
don't you love it? I think fans for so long has been hooked on this pale redheaded girl, and I love it. I love that they brought a beautiful woman of color in.
Yes,
and I think it's great. I am all for it. It's awesome. Awesome sauce.
She's a beautiful, and here's the thing too. She's known for her Disney show, right? But she had a role, and I can't remember what the show was, but she had a role in another show, and she absolutely killed it. And producers are known for telling other Disney talent to be like her, be like Zendaya, because she is known for how talented she is and how funny she is and how good of an actor she is. So I think this is great casting.
I think it is too. And, you know, as we keep talking about it, and we're talking about movies and we're talking about cinematic, well, the cash cow just keeps rolling for Suicide Squad, as this week it is still, for the fourth week straight, number one on the list, topping $600
million.
So, wow, I do believe that DC... You know, despite some continuity glitches that we discussed, be sure to check out our Suicide Squad review on that one here on PopX Cast. But it's episode 28, as a matter of fact. I think they got a hit. I think they did.
Man, this is absolutely a hit. And they were saying for a long time, well, the budget's so big and you have all these unknown characters. No, the marketing did its job with this one, because people were pumped to see this movie, and there has been enough positive fan response that we're getting these repeat viewings. People are going back, and it's pushed past 600 million worldwide. That's a great, great number, and I'm very happy with that. And that just means the DC Extended Universe is going to continue to push on through this movie. So it's very exciting.
Yep.
Let's move on to something that I've been very excited about for the last 2.5 weeks. The Duffer Brothers, creators of Netflix's Stranger Things, stated that there will be a season 2, but no premiere date has been set. The storyline will take place 1 year after the events of the end of season 1. Interesting. Interesting.
Man, 1 year? So what
That's
we're
going
to do is, so the timeline, Oh man, I just oh wow,
so good.
This is such a great week for news. I'm so excited. I can't hide it. I know that you want me, but Stranger Things is going to be awesome because next week, and we'll announce it again at the end of the show in case you forget, whatever. Next week, this same time, we will be doing the official Stranger Things review and more. So it is going to be freaking awesome. I have asked all of Team PopX to be all hands on deck. So it's going to be awesome. You guys, be sure to tune in for that.
I've been holding this in for so long, Joe.
That's what she
One
said.
Week until I... See, that ain't right, man. Come on now.
Sorry,
nickname, man.
That's it. We'll move on. So the Flash movie... I'm trying to do news here. This is crazy. The Flash movie will not only have one villain, but a team of them. The Rogues are to be rumored, with the first one named Captain Boomerang, Captain Cold, Heat Wave, Mirror Master, Abracadabra, Weather Wizard, and more. Oh my, the diabolical Circle of Doom is approaching on the Scarlet Speedster.
Crazy. It's too much this week, Joe. I can't take the news, man.
And you know,
we're getting the Rogues on the big screen. Joseph, help me out here, man.
Yeah, this is insane, dude. And it just keeps going. It's just like, really. And go ahead. I'm just at a loss because there's just so much news.
Yeah, man. Let's move on to something that's a little bit controversial right now. The Russo brothers confirmed that Steve Rogers is no longer Captain America in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Odds are we will see a new Captain America with a new costume and a new shield in Avengers: Infinity War.
Wow. Well, we know at the end of Civil War, Captain America was in civilian. He was in civilian, and he dropped it. We saw that. And fans kind of have speculated for a while that, you know, maybe he's going to take a back seat for this whole thing. And perhaps Bucky or Falcon can take the reins, because we know that both Bucky and Falcon in the comics have picked up the shield and assumed the role as Captain America. So it's interesting to know. And so I think it's good. I think really what it comes down to is good storytelling. And I think that they're really good at that. I mean, it gets fans interested. It's like, okay, Chris Evans is not Captain America. What? Mm-hmm. And then everybody's like, oh, when they go watch the theater, and it just blows up into this whole inner circle of just like, what? So
I have a question for you.
Sure.
I have a question.
Yep.
You know, in the comics, when he, you know, stops being Captain America, he becomes a character called Nomad. Do you think they could go that route in the cinematic universe? What do you think?
You know, it's possible. I don't really know what their plan is. There's so much material when you involve Steve Rogers or the Captain America persona. There's a lot of overhead involved in that. So I don't know. They could go many, many ways with that.
Just have to trust the Russo brothers, man.
I know. That's let's see here. I got a twofer here. There's one on the list, and then there's one I'm going to add at the end of it. In a deal between Fox and Marvel, Fox will be allowed to produce the X-Men spinoff shows Legion and Hellfire in exchange for bringing the Fantastic Four back to Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is huge, guys. The new Fantastic Four movie is scheduled for 2020 under the leadership of Marvel Studios, finally. So we have seen this role play out before with Spider-Man and Sony and Marvel. Now we finally get that with Fox and Fantastic Four. So we finally are. It's going to be crazy. What does that mean for 2020? Well, I think this is part of that new MCU that they were talking about. There it is. You get it? And so that's just my take on it. You don't have to do that. Now, there is a news thing that I didn't get to add, but I'm going to throw it in there just for our fans for this one. And so Doug Liman is set to direct a Warner Brothers Dark Universe DC movie. And this will include Swamp Thing and the Hellblazer Constantine and all of these crazies. And I know Mike doesn't have a graphic for this, and I do apologize, but I wanted to mention it because we finally get a Dark Justice League. Think about it.
That's exciting.
It's going to be awesome.
How, this, though. Doug was attached to direct the Gambit movie for Fox. So is that on the back burner now? Is that done for? Well, he was supposed to direct Gambit.
Well, here's the thing. Because of the success of Deadpool, which the Deadpool was kind of like, they don't know where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Deadpool's already scheduled to film again in March 2017 with an opening release on, I think, March 2018. So they have put the Gambit part on the back burner. And I think now Fantastic Four and Fox and all of this, I think this is on the limelight. This is where it's going. This is what's happening. And the fact that Marvel Studios has captured the Fantastic Four, it's going to be mind-blowing. And so,
That's some wonderful. And you know, that's great for the, because these characters, Fantastic Four, they have such great, just everything about the Fantastic Four in the comics has been so great over the years. And finally, I think finally we will have a great version of the Fantastic Four on the big screen, thanks to Marvel. I love this news. And the Dark Universe as well, man. I never thought I would see Justice League Dark on the big screen, but hey, it's 2016. It's time for a lot of new comic book stuff to happen. So I'm very excited about this. You know, Joe, something else to be excited for.
What's that?
The DeLorean Motor Corporation will begin production. Listen to this. On the iconic DMC-12 in 2017 with an all new design, priced between $80,000 to $100,000. Look at that,
dude.
Look at that.
The stainless steel body and everything. Does this mean, you know what? You know what I saw when I first saw this? What would a new time machine look like? Think about it. I mean, what would a new, flux capacitor and the whole nine yards, if they were to I don't want to say reboot, because that is just like, you can't reboot Back to the Future. It's
a masterpiece.
Dude, look at this car. This car is
so cool.
Oh my gosh. I may have to sell a kidney to get this car. I mean, a kidney or a testicle or something just to get this car.
Well, somebody threw out an idea the other day on the internet, and it was really interesting to me. What if they did a Back to the Future movie in the same universe, and you had the two characters return, but you got brand new characters to go on a brand new adventure, as opposed to rebooting and replacing the characters we love? Now, that could be that struck a chord with me. I was like, maybe that could work. I know it's something that you don't want to take and make new, but I think that could work. Especially, look at this car, man. That could be really, really cool.
Yeah, and I think with this car coming out, there may be some revised interest in bringing in Back to the Future Part 4.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? All right, so, we got several really cool things coming up for you this week. We got the Pop-X Hit-Its of the Week. We haven't done these in a while. But I'm going to actually show you one right now. Now, if you guys recall, back on episode 8, we interviewed none other, Russell Braun. Russell Braun is from DC Comics, but he's done things for Marvel Comics. He's done things for Disney Animation Studios. He released his brand new comic this week. It's Six Pack and Dog Welder. And Six Pack and Dog Welder are actually teaming up with Constantine to do some hero, anti-hero, crazy shenanigans going on. Nice. So this is a 1 in 6. And guys, you need to really check this out. It's from the creator of Preacher. So if you remember, we did Preacher a few episodes back. If you are a fan of that show and Garth Ennis and everything that he's created, well, this is Garth Ennis. Garth Ennis wrote and had done all of this story. And Mr. Russell Braun, the guy that we interviewed on episode 8, did all the artwork for the comic, and it's really awesome. A little information for you, returning to the DC series, Dog Welder is, of course, the character whose superpower is described by his name, the ability to literally weld dead dogs to his foes. I have no idea why. And Six Packs is the hero who gains more skills the more that he becomes... the more he imbibes, the more he doesn't do anything, the more powers he gets. So the two unite with Constantine, encountering many other DC heroes along the way for Six Pack and Dog Welder. This is Hard Traveling Heroes. It's out this week from DC Comics. Be sure to check that. And also, really quickly, while I have you, we have right now brand new Supergirl issue number one. Ooh. You might want to check that out. It's cool. It's part of the new series of Rebirths coming out from DC Comics. We also have Deathstroke number one. And nice. So these are all ones I haven't read these yet, so I'm really excited to dive into these. I did read Six Pack and Dog Welder, though, by the way. And last but not least, this is really cool. This is the Blue Beetle number one. Now, for fans who don't know who the Blue Beetle is, let me give you a little backstory. DC Comics is bringing back to life one of its Golden Age heroes from 1939. And this was created by Charles Nicholas Wachowski. Blue Beetle first arrived on the scene in Mystery Men's Comics number one by the way of DC Detective Comics. And for the first time, he is getting a reboot. So we are actually getting some old school DC coming back into the comics. Now, last but not least on the PopX Hit It of the Week, we have, I would like to thank my amazing neighbor next door for letting me lend this right here. This is really cool. Now, if you are a subscriber to Marvel Unlimited, which is either you can pay $9.99 a month or you can just pay all year, you get some really cool perks. So let's dive into this right quick. And this may give you an incentive, because when you sign up for Marvel Unlimited, you actually get unlimited access to all Marvel comics forever. So in this particular pack for 2016, we have an exclusive Iron Man issue number one issue with a cover. You can only get this cover through Marvel Unlimited. This is really beautiful. Agent Carter number one exclusive cover.
It's epic.
And last but not least, this was really interesting. Captain America White, number one. Now, so you get down to the bottom of the box, and you're like, hey, wait, is there something underneath there? Well, of course there is. Check this out. You get an Iron Man action figure. Bum, bum, bum. And look at this. It gets better. Vintage, Shield, and U.S. SSR pins.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
That is amazing.
Isn't that neat? So he loaned that to me, and he's like, hey, man, you gotta put this on your podcast. I'm like, yeah, freaking hell, we're going to put that on our podcast.
Of course. But,
heck yeah.
Lindsay Badger. That's awesome for him to what's do up, that. Girl?
Amazing.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey. How you doing? Lindsay Badger coming in for the Nerd Nugget. Yeah.
Hey guys, I'm Lindsay Badger, your Midwestern Okie geek at heart, and here is this week's Nerd Nugget. Spider-Man was very close to being kicked to the waste bin mere moments after making it off of the drawing board. Did you know this? Martin Goodman, the head of Marvel at the time, told Spider-Man creator Stan Lee that he thought that the new hero was a rotten idea for a comic book hero. Goodman sincerely believed that the character would struggle to win over Marvel's adoring fans for the simple fact that people were scared of spiders, and they would supposedly be scared of him.
What?
Is that not the silliest thing I've ever heard? Because, you know,
he was wrong.
Well,
I think they branded him enough to be your neighborhood friendly Spider-Man.
Well, you know? When you think about it, you think about Superman, and you know, for back in, you know, you got Batman, Superman, Captain America, and then you had Stan Lee coming out creating kind of a hero with more of a human grasp to him. Mm-hmm. We had Superman, Kal-El, but you had this guy who was a teenager, Peter Parker. And when they said Spider-Man at the time, this is like something that just resonated. You don't want to. Right. I remember Stan Lee's talking like, "Well, you don't want to call him the Wasp Man, or you don't want to call him the Bug Man, or Spider-Man," and it just resonated.
And here's a little bonus mini nerd nugget. They actually put a hyphen in between Spider and Man on purpose so that people don't confuse it with Superman, because when they spelled out together, they look very similar if you're just glancing over it. So
that's really cool. That's Lindsay Badger with the Nerd Nugget of the Week. Thank you, girl.
Oh my God, you're welcome, guys. Now, I'm going to hop out of here because you have a long history lesson. It's going to be great.
We're going to dive into this. So, Lindsay Badger, we'll see you on the sidelines, my dear.
Bye.
But Austin, are you ready to do this? The History of Comics, Part 3, the Dark Ages.
This stuff is so intense, man. I'm so ready to do this. I'm ready to teach some peoples. Let's do this, man.
Well, as to give you a little backstory before we dive into this, I am a certified comic book historian. I did do the Smithsonian course, and I was certified with 100% credentials. And so I can actually teach this stuff in a curriculum course. It was a 6-month long thing. So what I'm doing is I'm taking 6 months of what I was taught and condensing it down for you right here on PopX. Now, we have done a previously episode, History of Comics and Pop Culture Part 1, which was talking about the origins of comics and going back to the 30s and the 40s and the old days when the gangsters and the mob bosses kind of ruled the scenes. Then we fast forward up to the History of Comics and Pop Culture Part 2, where we talk about the Jewish immigration and how the sons and daughters of Jewish immigrants literally got into the print and publishing industry, and that's where they left their stamp. We have Jack Kirby, Stanley, Martin Lieber, who is Stanley, all these great names. And there's so many, Joel Siegel. So many names that we can list off. But if you missed that, go back to episode 10 and episode 20 for part 1 and 2. This is part 3, and this is not a good one. This is a doozy. It's the Dark Ages of comics. All right, so immediately following the end of World War II, superheroes became mere shadows of their former selves. So an era of comics were literally on the rise as both DC and Marvel ventured into new areas of storytelling. Just as the dawn of the Silver Age of comics arises, a devastating blow sends shockwaves throughout the entire industry, affecting artists, writers, and publicists alike. Now, both Marvel and DC Comics begin branching out their storytelling lines into different genres. Captain America became Captain America's Weird Tales. Strange, right? That's kind of creepy. So like you think about it, and I think we may have some graphics for that too, but I don't know if Mike's got them, but check the show images folder. But Captain America became Captain America's Strange Tales, while other comics and superheroes were replaced altogether with weird Western comics like Kid Colt Outlaw. Now you think of Kid Colt Outlaw, you know, back in the gunslinger days, Clint Eastwood, you know, and Charles Bronson back in the old Westerns. They followed what was being aired on television, Bonanza, for example. So,
okay.
Also, with the rise of the young romance comic books, which appealed to young teen readers, and iconic heroes were replaced with funny animal characters. So, young romance was kind of like, what do you call it? Like your teeny bopper. Teen novel type thing
like
that you
the
would
Twilights you, of today.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas you would have superheroes replaced with Bugs Bunny, Garfield, you know, those kind of characters, and it was kind of an interesting phase in comic books. Well, also crime stories and horror genres as well was a huge thing back in the day. So you had those suspensive, the Dick Tracys continued on into the 40s and 50s, and a new rise and a new kind of refound rebirth was the rejuvenation of the horror comic. You know, Dracula, Mummy, Frankenstein, Tales from the Crypt, those kind of comics were literally on the rise. And so it seems like after World War II, America was done with heroes. We had Captain America. We defeated the Nazis. Why do we need heroes? Why do we need to be some? Why do we need someone that we can rally behind if we're number one? So that was a mindset. And more lighthearted genres of heroes were later introduced.
So World War II ended on September 2nd, 1945. And the next decade would usher in not only the 1950s, but an all-new era in comics. The Atomic Age was on the rise. And America had just acquired the ultimate super weapon, codenamed the Manhattan Project, in 19, 1942,
number one.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so in 1945, you're fine, man. That's actually a great impersonation. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So in 1945, President Harry Truman gave the executive orders to drop nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, killing over 220,000 people. I mean, that is absolutely
look at that
insane.
Mushroom cloud, dude. Look at the mushroom cloud.
Man. You know, you see the footage and you see the pictures. You can't, that just does not do that justice, man. 220,000 people. That is absolutely incredible and sad at the same time.
Yeah.
Russian spies acquired the weapon as well. And so the Cold War begins between America and USSR in 1947. So then on February 9th, 1950, Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy delivers a speech that claims Soviets were infiltrating our federal government. Mm. McCarthyism is now born, giving rise to prejudice, injustice, turmoil, and basically dividing a nation. Spies, espionage, propaganda, and fearing the neighbor next door were all scare tactics orchestrated by McCarthy. People feared that they may have done something in their past which could have been used to and supported basically communist behavior in the eyes of McCarthy. McCarthy was cruel, he was vile, and he was targeted and he targeted Hollywood. And there's so many movies and documentaries made about this. I encourage you guys to go read about it.
The Manhattan Project is one too. That's a good movie.
It's absolutely, it's crazy to think about what he did. Mm-hmm. So at the time, several articles were written which focused on the idea that comic books were a melting pot for lurid behavior, overt sexuality, and delinquent mannerisms. I mean, it's crazy what these people came up with. But despite the fact of growing rise of crime among juveniles, many journalists and psychiatrists imply that comic books were the source for this kind of irrational behavior. I mean, this was the mindset, Joe, of people in those times. Comic books were the source of that kind of behavior.
Well, all right, so let's pause for a minute. That's a lot of stuff to digest. So let's talk about that for a minute. So today, 2016, let's say the 20s, the 2000s, 20-teens and stuff like that on up, what has been the one thing that you've heard in media that is the rise of juvenile crime and delinquent? What is the one media?
The one...
Video games.
Oh, that dude.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Much like the Mortal Kombat and the Call of Duties of our time, comic books in an era where kids could, their entertainment was a book that inspired. And,
wow. And
so you see where I'm going with this.
It's crazy to think about. Yeah.
So now for the first time, the comic book industry, the Jewish immigrants and everybody that's involved have entered the atomic age of comic books.
Wow.
And that's where a lot of these atomic superheroes were born.
Wow.
The Incredible Hulk, for example, Bruce Banner,
okay.
Bruce Banner, an atomic gamma radiation explosion.
Mm. Okay.
Supercharged.
Get it?
So a lot of these, the Fantastic Four, for example,
Peter
Parker,
okay.
Spider-Man, radioactive spider. So everybody in the industry was influenced directly by the events that were happening in the world. And so was the comic book industry. And so a lot of these heroes were literally molded out of their uranium mines and the atomic age of the era in which they lived. And so
that
you get
crazy.
This one senator who comes on board, Joseph McCarthy. He was a radicalist from Wisconsin, and he had a way with words. He was kind of like the John Donald Trump of our time. And I don't say that in a bad way. I just say that because...
Yeah.
Donald Trump can literally talk his way out of any situation.
Yeah,
he knows
how to talk.
He has a silver tongue. And
yes,
so,
sir.
For example, I'm not saying that in a bad way. So if you guys are Trump supporters, that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that Joseph McCarthy kind of can be compared to that. Mm-hmm. So he knew how to talk. He was a really well-spoken senator. And he knew how to get people. And so he was like... So when the Soviets acquired the nuclear bomb, and they got the actual schematics to build it themselves. McCarthy got this idea. What if I just scare everybody up in Hollywood and I make them fall under my propaganda and my strategy? And it worked. And the government fell right into suit with it as well. And it was just this whole mass hysteria where your neighbor next door, you didn't know if they were a communist. So
it's insane.
It is very insane. So hopefully that gives you a little more backstory on the stuff. So we're talking about, you know, as Austin was ending, that there were psychiatrists that implied that comic books were the source of this quote unquote mischievous juvenile erratical behavior. One psychiatrist, Mr. Frederick Wortham, who, if you watched at the beginning of the show, you saw a little snippet of Mr. Wortham's interrogation of one of the comic book founders of the time. He stepped forward in 1954, and Mr. Dr. Frederick Wortham had his self-written book, The Seduction of the Innocent. And this book sent shockwaves throughout the entire nation and almost killed the entire comic book industry as we know it. Parents, school teachers, everyone began reading it and buying it, and it almost mirrored the horrific book burnings of Nazi Germany, if you think about it. And he created mass hysteria along with McCarthyism as educators rallied behind Wortham. Reading comics began to pick up even more, because when you say don't do something, what does the juvenile do? What do everybody wants to, like, well, I want to get into this. What is everybody doing? You know, it's like, you know, it's like pot of the 60s, you know, everybody smoked it, I guess, but I don't know. So, but you think about it, as educators rallied behind Frederick Wortham, reading comics began to pick up even more momentum by the mid-50s, and it's almost became like a witch hunt for the elusive comic book hiding under your child's pillow. Wow. Because comics were everywhere at the time, attention was focused directly as the root of all evil. With Wortham's book now in the hands of adults, federal action was then taken as artists, writers, and publishers were taking to the stand to defend their rights in the comic book industry. So everybody was literally on the podium. Wortham attempted to bridge the gap between post-World War II rise in juvenile delinquency, and his book gave everyone those perfect little answers that they were looking. So you got post-World War II, vets are coming home, so the moms have been raising the kids for a while, the daddy figure's not been around, so the kids are acting up, and everybody points at comic books as the source of juvenile delinquency. So Wortham, he tried to bridge the gap between World War II and juvenile delinquency, and his book gave him all the answers. So regardless of how obscure, how over the top his claims were, many years later, his research was investigated on the claims of his self-proclaimed novel. Wortham manipulated, overstated, compromised, and fabricated evidence, especially that evidence that he attributed to personal clinical research with young people for rhetorical gain, excuse me. So among the criticisms leveled at The Seduction of the Innocent, the novel, are that Wortham used a non-representative sample of young people who were already mentally troubled, that he misrepresented stories from colleagues as being his own, and that Wortham manipulated statements from adolescents by deliberately neglecting some passages while rephrasing others such that they better suited his interests and thesis.
Man, that's awful. This is terrible. What?
Well, back in the day, you can write a book.
Yeah,
and you can, I guess so. You know, you didn't have Wikipedia. You didn't That's have true. The internet. There was no way to find if it was valid or invalid. There was no filter for publications. So this doctor, I mean, it's self-proclamation. So that's all it was.
So he was able to get away with all of this, just and people went along with it.
It took about 20 to 30 years later, and they
before it,
people found, well, some researchers and investigators found his documentations, and they found everything, and they found the snippets that he wanted, the things that he rephrased, and pretty much proved most of his points, a good chunk of them, 80% or so, were twisted, invalid, or manipulated to pursue his own agenda. Wow. Yeah.
Hmm. Of course. Well, he gets what he deserves, I guess.
Yeah.
So moving on, in 1954, the comic book industry formed the Comics Code Authority, which allowed comics to be slowly taken out of the limelight of communist propaganda and as a source of toxic behaviors. It allowed comic book writers, illustrators, and publishers to be able to self-regulate the content they produced in the U.S.
Mm.
Through the CCA, though the CCA had questionable rules and regulations, it did in fact allow the comic book industry to press forward, and in essence, it saved the industry. It mm-hmm. saved comic books, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
The CCA has now become defunct and abandoned by all major markets, all major comic book publishers. But during the worst of times, this was a key element that kept everyone in place.
Mm-hmm.
The CCA, in many ways, had elements of good and bad, frustrating publishers and artists to redo work until it was approved by the authority. But through the rigorous frustration, our beloved heroes prevailed, and where a golden age disappears, the silver age soon arises. If the CCA had not come to be when it did, would our heroes have survived the McCarthy and the Wortham era? No one truly knows, but we still have comics today. And for the comic book enthusiasts, such as Joe and I, we're extremely thankful for that. And the CCA is something that, although it was divisive, it's something that we can appreciate because, in a way, it saved comic books.
It did. It saved comic books from the federal limelight.
Yeah.
And so the CCA, as crazy and as strict as they were,
mm-hmm.
it worked.
Yeah.
We got to keep our Peter Parkers. So the Comics Code, which is kind of like the Bible of comic book censors, went far beyond addressing concerns about crime or horror comics to implement a broad regulations that addressed what CMAA President John Goldwater of Archie Comics identified as, quote-unquote, problem areas. The 41 provisions purged sex, violence, and any other content not keeping in the critics' standards. So respect for the government and parental authority was kind of stressed and enforced. And censors either even became kind of grammar Nazis, quote unquote. I don't want to say that, but you know, eliminated slang, colloquialisms. I can never say that word. Colloquialisms.
Anyway,
it's all good. So comics were kind of received by the seal of approval, and if they were suitable for youngsters, then the code was put on the comic book. And as the controversy over comics died down, the seal of approval became a little less prominent on comic book covers. The enforcement of the code provisions, however, continued to restrict potential of the medium. Nothing inherent in the form of comic books prevented comic books from telling stories for different audiences, but the perception of comic books as juvenile literature was reinforced by the Comics Code.
Hmm.
Man. Yes. Interesting.
This is getting intense, Joe.
It is.
You know what's really intense?
What's that?
Stan freaking Lee.
Stan the
so
man.
By 1971, Stan the Man began publishing comics despite the code stamp in The Amazing Spider-Man number 96 through 98. It's basically a three-part miniseries
mm-hmm.
where Peter Parker's friend becomes addicted to pills. Though the CCA refused to back Lee's writer of drug abuse, Marvel pushed forward and distributed the storyline anyway and acclaimed praise for their socially conscious efforts. Stan the Man was one of the first publishers at Marvel to release a comic storyline not approved by the CCA. Never before had substance abuse been covered in comics. I mean, albeit mm-hmm. Spider-Man. But this groundbreaking storyline remains one of these staple story arcs, even to this day in 2016. This story was a milestone, and due to its success, its publication ultimately led to the loosening of restrictions that the Comic Authority Code imposed on creators in terms of story content. So basically what Stan did, along with creating all these wonderful characters, revolutionizing comics,
mm-hmm.
game changer, man.
He fought the system, and he was a rebel.
Boss.
Stan Lee, well, you got to put it in perspective. At the time in the 70s, substance abuse was on the rise, especially in inner city. And he was very daring
to do what he did.
He was very daring, and he did it well.
Yeah.
And As a matter of fact, there's another series that comes to mind. I think of Batman Venom, when Bruce Wayne falls under Venom, which is what the same substance that Bane uses.
Yeah.
And he becomes addicted to it. And as a matter of fact, Russ Braun, who done Six Pack and Dog Welder, and we interviewed on episode 8, he was the actual artist for the entire
Amazing.
Batman Venom series. I have the comic series. So wow. It actually led, that was in the early 90s, and that was with DC. So
that's incredible.
DC did their own storyline in the 90s as well. Interesting stuff. It was just really crazy. So changes in distribution and resulting rise of these so-called independent publishers, plus the fact that the CMA was almost out of the copies of the 1971 code, it led to kind of push in 1982 another revision. A draft written by a consultant hired by the CMAA was rejected. Gladstone, which published Disney Comics and Archie, favored retaining the 1971 code. Marvel, too, indicated a willingness to continue under the old code. Harvey wanted a new code, but warned against any meaningless liberalization. However, DC indicated it was considering eliminating the seal of approval from its books, arguing that the 1971 code was embarrassment and that it was a hindrance to the creative talent of artists and writers. Go DC Comics.
Wow.
As a result, the CMAA drafted a two-part document that met the DC standards for broad guidelines.
Okay.
And the principles of the Comics Code Authority contained general statements about violence, language, and other areas of concern. The second part was editorial guidelines, listed the specific rules for each of the content areas. So the CMAA forbid the release of this internal document to the public. We don't know what the guidelines were. Well, we do now because the Comics Code Authority is defunct.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Go DC, man. Go DC. I like this whole fighting.
It's cool, right? It's cool.
Yeah, this is so interesting. So the impact of the 1989 code eroded as comic books disappeared from the shelves of general retailers. Comic book specialty stores willingly carried comics without the seal of approval, and even members of the CMAA created imprints for the direct market, bypassing the review process. Marvel struck a major blow to the viability of the CMAA's self-regulatory code in 2001 when it withdrew from the Comics Code Authority in favor of an in-house rating system.
Isn't that cool?
That is awesome.
Marvel yet again sticking it to the man.
So by 2011, only two publishers printed the seal of approval on the cover of their comics, Archie and DC. DC Comics announced in January 2011 that it was dropping the seal of approval, and Archie soon followed. Today, publishers regulate the content of their own comics. I love this.
Mm-hmm.
The demise of the Comics Code Authority and its symbol, the seal of approval, marks elimination of the industry-wide self-regulation against which there is little legal recourse. Now, the comic book community can answer its critics by invoking its First Amendment rights, assisted by the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, whose mission is to protect those rights through legal referrals, representation, advice, assistance, and education. Joe, fight the system, man. Go Marvel, go DC, and go Archie.
Well,
man.
It was kind of like a trickle down effect. Stan done it in 71.
Mm-hmm.
DC started like, you know, we need to rewrite this. We need to do this. And then in 2011, I think it was, Marvel totally withdrew from the entire thing altogether. And it was a turning point because then we had the rise. We're talking 89. Shortly after that, in 94, we had comics like Preacher.
Mm.
And we had Batman.
The risque comics. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? I don't want to call them B comics, but, you know, it was interesting. So as we wrapping up, from the infancy of the Cold War era with Russia, spies, espionage, and propaganda, the atomic age of superheroes, the 1950s pushed the comic book industry to boundaries uncharted since the era began. The comic book industry has had many shapes and forms, from its rise to the 30s to the early 60s, having survived the communist era, World War II, the Cold War, and beyond. Much joy and escapism is perceived through the eye of the comic book reader. The Dark Age of comics was just that, a season of learning and evolving. And now, as we enter into the Silver Age of comics and beyond, we learn to appreciate the diligence and the great pains that both writers and publishers endured during this era, during McCarthyism's and Frederick Wortham's seduction of the innocent. And it pains me, though, when I think about this as we kind of do a wrap-up commentary. I just think about all those cherished comic books that were burned by the kids in the streets and just this hysteria that was created. And you think about all the old Superman comics and Captain America's and Tales from the Crypts and comics that are just priceless today were just burned foolishly in the streets. Yeah. Stupid. Stupid.
Awful.
So what is your take on everything, man, as we wrap things up here on the history of comics?
Joe, I mean, you're the comic book aficionado, man, but you have no idea until you actually go back and look at the history of comic books, because what these writers, what these publishers went through to get their comic books, to get their art to the public, man, they basically went through hell and back to do what they did for our benefit. And you have to appreciate all of the people who went through all of these tough times just to get what they love so passionately, like the Stan Lees. I mean, Stan Lee fought the system, man.
He did.
And for whose benefit? For his benefit, yes, but for our benefit.
The industry
as well.
As a whole.
The industry as a whole, man. And you have to appreciate what they did. I think what we talked about tonight is some of the most important stuff when it comes to, you know, the love of comic books, because without everything that happened, we wouldn't have comic books. We wouldn't have the MCU, the DCEU, nothing today without what these guys went through. And I find it absolutely incredible, man. And I think this has been a great episode.
Has been a very good episode. And it just for people out there that are wondering, well, if you guys have done three parts of the history of comics, is there a four? Yes, there is the Silver Age of comics. So there, on episode 40 coming up, we will be doing the final final part in the series, and that's the Silver Age and beyond. So we'll be talking about the rise of the Incredible Hulks, the Spider-Mans, the Peter Parkers, and the like. And so it'll be really cool. And so join us on episode 40 as we kind of wrap up this really cool thing that we just started randomly. So it's really cool. And hey, guys, as always, if you see something exciting on the shelves or you go and see a movie in the theater, anything around geek culture in general, let us know with our PopX hotline. Just dial 850-417-7679. That's 850-417-POPX. And we would love to hear from you. Also, go ahead, Austin. Sorry, I'll just keep on reading, man.
No, keep going, son. We are part of an amazing network called Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some of the amazing podcasts in our home network. And we're not just telling you that because we have to. Listen, I went back this week. There's some great podcasts, and there's some great information to be told. So I really encourage everyone to go on that website and listen to these awesome podcasts.
Yes, and if you were to ask me my top two favorites right now, and I'm sorry, Gonna Geek. I mean, the ones I listen to the most, Crimson Comet and the Starling Tribune, are definitely because it deals with Flash and Arrow.
Yeah.
That's kind of like my forte right now. So SP and Chris Farrell, hats off.
Yes,
and so also you can follow us on social media. We have a Facebook, Instagram, a Tumblr, a Patreon, a Twitter, and a Pinterest. And you can also follow us everything at PopXCast. If you want to drop us an email, well, you can do that too. PopXCast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from all of our amazing, inspirational, and faithful listeners. Also, for future or past shows, please check out our official website, www.popxcast.com.
Mm-hmm. I am Austin Burke at The Burkinator. Just search and find me. I also have a YouTube page, Austin Burke, where I do movie reviews, reactions. So check that out as well. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes, absolutely. And we want to send a huge thank you over to, we got Luke hanging out with us over in the live chat room right now, and several other live viewers. We do appreciate you hanging out with us on this live show as we broadcast right here live from PopX Central. And I am Joe Burke at Rotcav, ROTCAV on the internet. And of course, I want to give a big hats off to Team PopX. These guys make it happen. Miss Lindsay Badger over in the chat room holding it down for us and posting some of that beautiful linkage love and some amazing gifts that she does. We love you, Lindsay Badger. And also to our faithful Mr. Mike Ippolito, all the way up in Atlanta, for the slides and graphics love. We love you, Mike. There you
go. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
It's the Carlton.
Not unusual to be loved by anyone. All right, so... Oh my gosh, that's great. So as we wrap up this amazing episode, we want to say stay tuned for episode 31 coming up next Sunday night. Ladies and gentlemen,
Stranger Things.
Stranger freaking things. Oh my God. I watched this and I was just so good.
It's amazing.
So good. Oh my gosh, it's so good. It's going to be good. And so guys, from all of us here at Team Pop X, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for downloading. Leave us a 5-star rating. Gonna Geek Network, we love you guys. Thank you for letting us be on your network. And we will catch you next time right here on PopX Cast. Take care.
From everyone here at PopX Cast, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And don't forget to subscribe for more great content. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. All at PopX Cast. Get your geek on. All at PopX Cast.